Good evening, America. Tonight, I'm Eric A. Sinani, and you're on Eric A. Sinani Unplugged, right here on your iHeart dial, your FM dial across whatever stations, Stream Life TV, Roku TV, Fire TV, if it's not available, demand it, folks. Today, I'm talking directly to every American out there. Okay, we're talking to everybody. Doesn't matter who you are, what party affiliation, where you stand, what generation you're in. This is everybody who has watched the last couple months, I say even a little longer, the last couple of years unfold with a sick feeling in your stomach and a knot in your chest. It's just been terrible. Charlie Kirk was assassinated, an American patriot, a husband, a father, gunned down on U.S. soil for daring to speak his mind. Let's lament this together. For daring to speak his mind. I have a constitution right here. The First Amendment of the United States Constitution says he has a right to speak his mind. Now he's no longer here on this earth. President Donald J. Trump stood on a stage in Pennsylvania. He was at the time, still always by the title president, because he was a previous president running for a re-election, stood on a stage and took a bullet to his head. Yes, you might say his ear, but your ear is on your head. Had it been a millimeter more, we would be in a different world right now. He was nearly executed in front of the nation, the world. Okay. Candace Owens, a conservative podcaster, number one podcast in the world right now. Candace Owens, a wife, a mother, a commentator, publicly targeted with death threats because she refuses to bow to the mob or regime. This is not politics as usual, folks. It's not. This is not the heated discourse that we're supposed to have. It's not. And here's what nobody else in the news is honest enough to admit. That's why you come here. When a country hits this level of hatred, it does not just wound the public. It wounds the public figures. It wounds everybody. And it wounds you that are watching and listening. You folks are wounded and ruined by that. Our children, everybody. The father who wonders if it's safe to speak in front of his child. The mother who is afraid to post what she really believes. She may have convictions and feelings. She can't post them. The veteran, like myself, who has thought that I've been on foreign soil and I've experienced probably better situations than some people have here. You start to just shut down as a human being. We do. We just start to, right? You just give in. You stop laughing. We stop laughing. And when we stop laughing, folks, we stop connecting. And connection is key. Connection is key. You start living a tight life, you become angry, and then we have the loneliness epidemic. Very sad. Very sad thing. This is how free people lose their soul before they lose their country. Let me stop there, okay, for one second. They lose their soul, yet people lost their life defending this very great nation. I have taken that oath. I do solemnly swear to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to bear true faith and allegiance of the same, etc. People like me, we mean that. We mean that. And people are struggling and hurting. But our story as Americans, folks, has never been about bullets and ballots. Yes, we've had our share of bullets and ballots. But it truly has been our ability to laugh and to make something out of chaos. We turn something out of chaos. I guess making lemons into lemonade, right? From soldiers joking in foxholes to families cracking dark jokes in the hospital waiting rooms and great leaders using wit and humor to maybe open the dialogue. I wonder what President Reagan said to Gorbachev, other than tear this wall down. I'm sure they laughed. They did. Humor has always been one of the ways Americans survive. And it should, we should not be broken. We are here. Humor is not denial, folks. It's not a weakness. It's a pressure valve. The pressure valve. It is an opportunity to release some of the cortisol and stress and everything. And our guests will get into more of the science to it from your body to rid your body, to cleanse your body and become a new human being. It's a reminder that we are in a violent season and we are still human beings, folks. We are still human beings. Everybody's a human being and we're still free. We are in the greatest nation in the world. We are the beacon of freedom for all. And that must never perish. So humor used wisely lowers your blood pressure. It does. There is scientific fact to this, and our guest is going to talk about it. It actually calms your nervous system. And I can say from military and from fire and from everything that I've done, we tell jokes. And it's usually after a really bad incident. So I actually have personally experienced this, and we'll discuss this with the guest. It strengthens your relationship. It builds bonds. And it gives a little room for mental health when there's maybe not a mental health practitioner there to actually walk you through. But if used reckless, folks, and sadly enough, we're all too aware of it being used recklessly. Just go on Twitter, just go on any of these things and see the nasty garbage that people have to say about people. There are no consequences for what you could say. You can lie and hurt people, and there's just no consequences. And it just feeds hatred, and it is tearing our nation apart. So tonight, right here on Unplugged, we're going to talk about how we can stay human in a nation under fire and how we are going to use that humor as a weapon. We're coming in strapped. We're strapped with humor, okay? We're strapped with humor to protect each other with a weapon from other people. It's going to be our shield. It's our sanity. It's for our families, and it's for our collective future. And I'm not going to do this one alone, folks. I have a man with me. With me is a man who has spent his career studying how humor works, studying humor. You know, he did. How humor affects your physiological and your biological, the endorphins and the neurotransmitters and all these wonderful things in your brain. He studied this. He's written more than 100 academic articles on this very, not that exact topic, but variations of that topic. He truly is a scholar of all scholars. And he has a human heart. He truly is a great guy. I personally like him a lot. So a little bit on his bio. He has a BS degree, Bachelor of Science, and a PhD in clinical psychology. Clinical. All right. So we're going from humor to actually treating mental health. From the University of Pittsburgh, he has a master's degree, Master in Science from the University of Toledo. And he's completed a postdoctoral fellowship, which I'm jealous of, in behavioral modification is at what is known now as Stony Brook University of New York. I have a little experience with University of New York at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. He went on to, besides all these wonderful things, he's gone on to serve as a professor of psychology at San Diego State University. And he earned the title of Professor Emeritus, which is just, as a faculty member, hats off to you, sir. So he's authored hundreds of academic papers, press articles. He's everywhere. 13 book reviews. He writes continuing education courses. We have that in common. I write continuing education courses in the legal sector, and he does it in his sector. That's why this is a perfect moment on this show. There's two people here that can really talk about something tonight. And he's published five additional traditional books. He is licensed to practice psychology in both California and Florida. And here's another good one, folks. He served as an exchange professor, you have student exchange, as an exchange professor with Belgium and Singapore. And he consulted with the United States Peace Corps on the Jamaica Project, which I covered on another episode. This is just amazing. But he doesn't just study humor, folks. That's key. He's very versatile. He is a Renaissance man, truly. He doesn't just study the humor. He actually performs it. He actually is a comedian. I mean, Unreal. He's a comedian. Can you imagine, Rose, you're having a professor that was actually funny? I mean, right? Unreal. So his latest book, entitled How Humor Helps, Enhancing Your Relationships, Your Health, and Your Happiness. So without further ado, it is my distinct pleasure and honor to welcome our guest, Dr. Lou Franzini. Bring him into the show. Dr. Lou Franzini, welcome to the show. What would you like me to call you for the duration of the show?
You can call me Lou.
Okay. So welcome to the show.
Don't call me irresponsible.
That's it. Don't call me late to dinner, right? What's funny, folks, is that we will be putting a link in after this airs live. He was a guest on the Hostile Zone, and what a wonderful guest you are. Again, I thank you. You are a wonderful guest on the Hostile Zone. And we are thrilled that we're going to be able to be utilizing him as a contributor for some psychological discussions, because he's going to help quell the gaslighting in the streets and the community. So tell the folks a little bit about yourself that I didn't give them a ring.
That's interesting that gaslighting is one of the continuing education courses that I wrote.
Really?
Yeah.
You need to send us those links for those, by the way, too.
Okay, we'll do that. I'm working for a company called Professional Development Resources, and I've done 13 courses for them. And
now, do you write them, Lou, and teach them?
I'm no longer teaching. So,
because I wrote mine and I teach them.
Yeah, no, I 13 different courses, and it's all done by people. They advertise it, and people all over the country need continuing education units from psychiatry, psychology, social work, to renew their licenses and so on. So in the book reviews was 32 actually, and 13 CE.
Not 33, Lou? Not 33? If you're in a conspiracy world?
Just finished 32. So
the next you're not privileged yet. You're not privileged yet.
So I've got a lot of credentials in the writing and so on, and I have.
You truly do. You honestly, hats off to you, sir. You really have done an amazing amount of stuff. You made your mark, and you got so much more to give.
And I was president of Laugh Masters, which is a Toastmasters International club in San Diego. Wow. And
I was there out in Coronado, and I probably saw you at some point out there.
Could have. I'm presenting with you and trying to get people to become aware of how humor helps. And it's not a technical book. It's really
It's a nice read. We had the pleasure, folks, for your watching. And remember, Lou, that people are listening in their cars, et cetera, and watching. So when you say things, you just kind of have to describe it too. But we've had the great distinct honor of now doing a second show with you and being in the green room. I'm telling you, he's an amazing, amazing guy. He's very intelligent, knows his stuff, and I think this is going to be a great show. So similar to the Hostile Zone, we're going to have some segments and some roundtable, you and I, all right? So for the folks out there, the title of tonight's show is How Humor Helps, Staying Human in a Nation Under Fire. And what we're going to do is hit some of these topics. I'm going to hit them and then we're going to discuss them, all right? Number one, we're going to talk about explain why Americans and the atmosphere of this assassination attempts and the threats of psychological shredding within people, even as far from the, even that weren't on the front lines. Two, we're going to talk about how humor can be used wisely and to mask, emotional and become emotional armor, helping you and your family survive a nonstop barrage of fear in the news and rage. We're going to break down humor. I'm going to get through them and then we're going to talk about it. We're going to break down humor, how it actually is an integral part of relationships, all types of relationships, and family dynamics. We're going to talk about that, how it splits politics, it splits people. People will not be friends anymore over this stuff. And he's going to teach you how to stay funny, but still be a human in a world where one joke gets you fired, banned, or canceled, or even targeted. He's going to give you the concrete tools and the rituals that he believes truly work, with rituals that he's done, tried, and studied. He's going to walk you through this and explain, not give you exact details, but he's going to give you a roadmap. This is the unplugged. It's tactical. He's giving you a tactical map of how you can do this without any fantasy, without any pretending that danger isn't real. Just be positive. No nonsense. It's real world psychology with real world insight from a clinical expert and a veteran and a lawyer who refuses to let America lose its humanity. So talk to me. What say you?
Well, that's quite an assignment. And
I was just going through it quickly. And, you know, I wanted to get the folks there. Now we can just have a little round table. So I'm going to go back to like the number one that I prefaced. So let me get back to it so we can talk about it for a second here. And we can just chat. Number one was, I want you together explain why America's atmosphere of assassination attempts and threats is psychologically shredding the people. And even those that are like a miles from the front lines.
Yeah, it affects everybody with all the publicity and so on when there are assassination attempts and successful or not.
Yeah.
The risk out there of being on the opposite side of another group of people. And unfortunately, I think the country is very divided these days.
It is. And, when do you think that started, Lou?
Well, it's always true to a certain degree, but in the past few years, each side has debased the other side, and it's increased the differences, the difficulties. People are committed politically to their party. Probably more so than ever before, instead of cross-cutting.
I never judge somebody. I won't be friends with somebody. You know what I like here in my studio? You were working with my engineer, tech here, Rose. She's Generation Z, Zulu, Generation Zulu. And she is, let's put it like this, she's not conservative like myself. but I watch her over there. I mean, Rose, you're like, you hear what I'm saying, and we're not fighting, and you actually are starting to agree with some of this stuff. And she gives me great insight. Like you were saying, I want to hear her side, because that's the only way we're gonna learn and become better people. Good. And I kind of like that with her here. But not everybody's like that. She's very intelligent and very organized. Most people would scream in your ear and try to hurt you. But,
not everybody is like that, and that's part of the problem. You know, the legislators themselves are as divided as anybody else, and historically they would. On whether it's a bill or an issue, whatever they're working on, they would get together and compromise and come to understand the other side better than before. And it worked smoothly, and they came up. Now they closed down the government, and one of the discrepancies that would upset citizens is that a lot of people got hurt. But they were from the air traffic controllers. Yeah.
And get paid,
SNAP recipients and so on. When they shut down the government, a lot of people weren't getting funds that they were relying on to live. But you know who didn't lose their pay? The legislators, the senators and representatives. And that highlights that the problems they got taken care of on their typical salaries and so on. They probably had other income as well.
Yeah, and right.
That just,
I mean, actually, that could be another topic for an episode about the side hustle, because I think that takes an emotional toll on people too.
Yeah, and it influences their decisions on different issues coming up for votes. So at the very least, humor can help understand what's going on, but also personally, various individuals who are upset or maybe directly being hurt by the changes in the fighting in the government, within the government. So personally,
and it's visceral and vicious fighting. It's not bantering and, you know, having a spirited debate. It's vicious.
And that's, unfortunately, that's the way it is. Historically, people would chat over it or over coffee or have lunch with somebody. And now it's so aversive. And, Humor can do a lot of good things for people. Maybe it's needed more than ever in bad times. And I'd say these are bad times because there's so much.
They are terrible times. So you know what you're going to do right now, Doc? Give us a funny joke. Give us something good. Make the make the viewers at home, the listeners in the car, who are probably hearing some garbage on the news before this, make them laugh.
Well, I'll tell you something else about that. Sometimes I just like to quote what other people might have to say on the topic. Steve Martin, famous comedian.
Oh, like Steve Martin, like him.
Yeah. And he says that comedy is trying to, is working on making people laugh before they puke.
That's kind of like the diarrhea joke.
Yeah, we just covered the other end. You heard that last time.
We had that on the other show. And we said, you know what, a roast, we're going to do it again. Who doesn't laugh at a fart joke? I mean, we said that we laughed about it on the Hostile Zone, would you, right? I mean, we're all little kids when it comes to this stuff. And it does break the silence. Well, it breaks the silence. But it, I mean, it does break the tension. It really does, right? I mean, that no matter what situation, you can't stop but laugh. And it kind of makes it go away.
Do you want me to say that again? Or you know, it would...
Yeah, you know what? Right, because they didn't hear it. Give it to them. Yeah, they didn't hear that. Now you're going to hear it, but you got to go check the Hostile Zone. You got to go to iHeart and download it and listen.
Oh, well.
Floor is yours, sir.
You want me to say it again then?
Yeah, give it to the folks. Give it to them. Make them.
I don't usually use this kind of language, of course. But the story is that an older couple was sitting in church. And the woman leaned over to her husband and whispered to him that she just had let off a large silent fart. And she says to him, "Well, what should I do?" And he said, "I'd suggest changing the battery in your hearing aids."
I love it. I laughed again. It was great. That's a great one. And you know, you could have added a little piece to that. You could have said while they were sitting in church, because that's the place to let one rip.
Oh yeah,
in an elevator.
I said that at the beginning.
You know, I used to be I can make really really good fart sound without even moving my mouth and lips, whatever. And I used to go in like Las Vegas and Atlantic City and make it in my mouth would move. Like we stand there and I'm like. Mm-hmm. And like everyone, you heard that sound, right? Did you hear it? Huh? And nothing out of my face. Everybody would literally move. They would move. It's crazy, craziness. So yeah, we're gonna spitfire back and forth here. So I have a whole bunch of things for you to follow up from yesterday. We're just gonna chat and have some fun here.
I might mention that Tracy Morgan, a famous actor and comedian.
Oh, he's from Jersey. Love him. Great guy. Really good personality of the people.
Yeah, he makes a distinction between a comedian and a funny person.
Do tell.
And he says that the comedian is somebody who learns how to tell jokes. And a funny person is that. He's witty and can banter and so on. And my own preference for my own behavior is to be a funny person. Right. And I know a few jokes and so on, but that's a whole different skill.
It's a personality trait, though, right? It's a personality trait. You either have it or you don't.
Well, right? Especially the funny person part.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it's a trait. You're either funny or not.
Yeah, and it's important to be funny if you think you're funny, to actually be funny.
It's kind of like when you see a comedian say a joke and it just doesn't land. I feel the pain for him or her.
Yeah. And I'd rather see it as a personality trait, to be friendly, to see the humor in things that you weren't prepared for. It's not a canned story and so on, right, for which the outcome can be anticipated. And when it is anticipated, then it's not so funny to people because they can see it coming a mile away.
So I got something for you. With everything going on and everybody out there, is humor going to ever go back to where it was, Doc? Is it ever going to be the same again?
Well, probably not, because things change and the environment changes. The acceptability changes. Now, humor is very much in vogue in a sense. They're popular. Concerts being given by individuals. There's Netflix has specials all the time. And it doesn't have to be dirty, so to speak.
Nate. And speaking of Netflix station identification, you're watching Eric A. Sinati Unplugged right here with Dr. Lou Franzini. He mentioned Netflix. You can get us also Fire TV, Roku, Apple TV, et cetera. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to mention that Nate Bergotsky, an up-and-coming top comedian, has just been ruled the cleanest comedian in the business. This is a professional comedian.
What do you think about right off the top of my head, I hate when that happens. The Italian guy, Sebastian, love him. Right?
Yes.
How do you pronounce it? Macaluso or something like that?
Yeah, I know who you mean.
He's a funny guy and delivers jokes. He's like that full package.
They're professional comedians. Now, most of the people aren't, and that's a very tough business. That's a whole other issue.
Because you got people like, remember Andrew Dice Clay? He was not a funny guy. He was not funny. He just, said
that. He was really crude. And he's a much better actor than he was a comedian.
Right.
Because he's got acting skill.
So I got something to bring it into a little more serious back and forth, okay? So Doc Lou, America's rattled, okay? We had an assassination and an assassination attempt on our president. Death threats against other major public figures. Even those far from politics feel this emotionally and physically. How can you not? Explain to the American people what level of national trauma does to their mind and why humor becomes maybe a little bit of emotional armor in times like these.
Well, it works better on an individual basis rather than as large groups. You see things that don't seem very American or very fair. You've got ICE coming into major cities and picking up people and arresting them roughly. And because they have a darker skin or they're speaking Spanish, they're standing.
We could have a spirited debate right now if you like.
We may be in different spots on all this.
I believe in the rule of law, and I believe we should do things with humanity and compassion. But they came here to skip the line, and we are a nation of rules and laws, and they must be.
Yeah, I'm for put the criminals in jail. I mean, I'm for that, no question about it. But I'm afraid that a lot of people are getting manhandled and picked on without evidence. They're not following, by the law and so on. And you got the military heading into our streets. The military is not to fight our own people.
Right. But most people in the Constitution don't understand active duty military and whatever, both sides, reserve, operate under United States Code Title 10, but the National Guard operates under Title 10, and they operate under U.S. Title 32. 32 grants them law enforcement ability, so they are acting as a police division, so there is not a violation of federal law. Most people don't get the difference between the two of them. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. We can obviously be on the other side. We're going to get along and enjoy the conversation. But I mean, there's got to be a way to do this with a little bit of your thought and a little bit of mine. There has to be a way.
Well, I think so. I mean, we're all in favor of the law being followed, and there have been accusations on that hasn't been adjudicated yet.
Right.
But, can the National Guard go into a state where the governor doesn't want it or has never invited them or there's no immediate crisis and so on, things like that. And
that's why they paid for my law school to study things like that. and it's a very, very tough conversation. So, and continuing with the nation here, Doc, when a nation is stressed, and clearly we know that's happening, right? This literally will fracture everything. From home, to couples fighting together, friends breaking off contact. Like right here, you and I were two academic, mature adults, and we clearly were not on the same side, but we did with a great conversation. This is not happening. People are breaking up as friends. Families are splitting apart. They're no longer talking. Politics is creating fear and exhaustion. So I want to reach to your book. In your book, you write that humor is often the spark that starts a relationship. And it's the glue that's going to keep it alive. So how do you roll that into what I just said? Friends shouldn't be breaking up friends. I mean, can you imagine you walked out of this interview because we said that? I mean, that you know, it's terrible.
Well, it does. And humor is the most frequently mentioned reason. When they've interviewed couples that have been married many, many years. And why did that happen? How did you stick together? And the most frequent answer is they had a similar sense of humor.
Right.
And they would see things that are funny and agree on that. And it's also, that's how people meet frequently. In a social setting, and one person gets speaks out in a funny way or notices something in the room.
Is that how you met your wife? Is that how that happened?
In a sense.
What was your corny pickup joke line? Do you remember?
Well, she turned out to be, before we met was that she was in one of my classes.
Nice. And, gotta love it. Gotta love it. It's legal.
And she said that our department had a rule. You couldn't date or somebody that's in your class.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. My school's been, university.
Well, that semester, that is.
But you better make sure we didn't fail that girl.
She felt that the class was, I was very funny in the class and the teaching. And so she invited her two male roommates to come to the class and sit in and just listen to me. And one day she was on her way to tennis practice because she's on a tennis team. And
I heard she was quite good, you said, too, right? She was quite good.
Oh, yeah. She was an All-American tennis player.
And you were an athlete as well, right?
Well, I still am, at least since last August.
Well, I mean, like you could have went professional athlete at that when you were younger.
Well, yeah, I got started too late, really. Fact of the matter is a small town in Pennsylvania, and we didn't have a tennis team. We had just the three big sports, and I just picked up tennis on my own and was pretty good at it, and I liked it, and so on.
I want to ask you another thing real quick. You said your wife wrote a book. Do you by chance know the title or what it's about?
Yeah, it's called Behind the Veil, and it's nothing at all about humor particularly. And it's about spirituality. And she,
we like to formally invite her on the shows.
I mentioned that to her, and I think Rose or somebody looked it up.
She's typing away right now over there, pulling it up. Oh,
yeah, she can pull it up. It actually, she's a co-author, and with reporting this, she's a professional writer, so she's the co-author and of the man. Who was eventually an opioid addict, and how he overcame that.
We could do a whole episode on that too. You know, could do a whole episode on how that happened.
I think you'll find it quite interesting.
Yeah, I think you and I would have a lot of great conversation, and I like that we're not aligned on every issue. And I think that might be good for people to see a real conversation.
I just want to finish my teaching story.
Oh yeah, yeah. My bad. Cut me off for selling my show. Don't worry about it, Luke.
Okay. I start a story I want to finish. So no. She had brought her tennis bag, and I noticed that spoke with her afterwards, and she explained she was on the team and so on. And I said, well, you may be the answer to my quest for a mixed doubles partner. And after some practice and so on, we became doubles. So we won gold medals in senior Olympics.
There you go.
And we were number one in San Diego County for a while, and as a mixed doubles team. Love came as a consequence of that. It wasn't just a love of tennis. It was a mutual thing at first. And
maybe the spark of humor created it for you, honestly, right?
And we've just celebrated our 30th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. With a 29 days in Europe.
Wow. Really? Where'd you go in Europe?
Several places. Barcelona. Nice. Athens.
Any Italiana? Sicily. A little Roman? All right.
Sicily, yeah. Nice. Because when I lived in Belgium, I got to visit northern Italy several times. My parents came over and so on. But I've never been to Sicily. Sicily's not easy to get to.
No, it's not.
You got to go to Rome.
You know, and it's funny. You got me thinking too. I told you we had talked after the hostile zone with some of our production. Another conversation I thought you and I would have would be a Greek and Roman philosophy on how they ran government and how they might have utilized humor and their reigns to where we are today.
Could be interesting. Could be interesting. So we spent time in Marsala and Taormina in Sicily. And those are really the highlights. And then to Lisbon and Porto, Portugal as well. So I learned some new words and lots of new experiences. And we really adopted to Sicily. And when in Athens, we climbed up to the Acropolis.
Aha!
Yeah, which was not a picnic particularly.
You know, I actually was just doing. I had Pythagoras theorem. I was listening to the other day too. Crazy, yeah. It's you mentioned that. I have Marcus Aurelius. I know I'm weird. I want to ask you, what does a healthy relationship building humor actually look like in the time now where everything is so raw? What does it look like, or what should it look like?
Well, there's less humor, I think, in the general society, consequently, because the politics have gotten so strong, and the first thing that's on the news and so on. And some things are sort of irrational, and you can laugh at that from a distance.
Right.
But families have been split, and I've experienced some of that myself. I have a cousin who's former FBI. And,
All right. You know, we love our three-letter people here. We love our alphabets on here.
Yeah. And he's retired.
We'd love to have him as a guest if he'd like to come on and talk about his career. I'd like to highlight people that serve. He's
interested. Well, I can ask him about it. But we kind of agreed not to talk politics. Because and his sister doesn't speak to me anymore.
Really? See, and isn't that sad? Is it sad, right?
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
And so I had a couple uncles who were chiefs of police in small towns and relatively small towns. So I have some contact. And I think I might have mentioned previously that I did a radio show in San Diego for a while with the chief of detectives. And we were talking about police community relations. And nice. I was representing the community. It wasn't particularly psychological, but
right.
I've had that experience. And
so you probably know what broken windows theory is.
No. Oh yeah. So, I'm interested in it too. I've had relatives very, very involved. And my cousin is sort of sad because we were pretty close.
And I feel you on that. I see it happen. It's a terrible thing. We're going to spin that into another section. When jokes become dangerously dehumanizing, thank you, and it becomes really dangerous, and we're seeing this right now in the social media world. So my question for you on this is, after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, people online joked about his death, terrible things. After the attempt on President Trump, people posted memes celebrating it. And now Candace Owens is receiving credible death threats, and people are treating it as it's a form of entertainment. So I ask you, from a psychological standpoint, when does humor cross the line into taking away and making the person a target and not a human, and become part of a cultural issue that outweighs everything?
Well, people do that, and they do it even in more minor ways, that is with just an individual, a friend or relative and so on, and that humor can be used negatively. It has many positive aspects to it, personal aspects, as you were saying earlier, that physically and reduction of tension, coping better with stress yourself.
Right.
But it can also be used negatively, picking on people.
Bullying. That's another one we can do.
Bullying.
Cyberbullying, you know.
That's no doubt. So
I want to add a follow with that to you as you're going. How can ordinary Americans, my listeners and viewers, recognize with their own humor if it's slipping as a coping mechanism or is it becoming cruelty? Because there is a fine line. So tell them at home, they understand.
Yeah, it does have all those things about a coping mechanism. It helps an individual cope with stress and finding it makes them more resilient. It's sort of like the adage of it lets you learn how to bend without breaking.
Yep.
That's the essence of resilience. But when you pick on somebody who is different than you, just because they're different than you, making jokes about them. It used to be you could make fun of a group if you were a part of that group.
And that was a
formal guideline.
My best friend in New Jersey, he's a godfather of my son, he's black. And that's all we do is talk to each other in racial terms. But we love each other, you know?
Well, that's
you can't exception. Do that anymore, though, right? I mean,
that's the exception that happens. And it used to be, well, he could make jokes about and using the N-word. And I have a whole chapter on the N-word in one of my books, the Just Kidding book.
I read that. And actually, that's why I kind of brought that up.
Yeah. And my personal view is nobody should use the N-word.
Right. Yeah. Ever. Ever.
Black or not. It's and not even, you know, I've heard guys, comedians refer to their kids using the N-word and so on. And what happens, I'm afraid, is that it gets desensitized.
Right. And we're becoming desensitized to murders. How many times they're playing the video of poor Charlie being assassinated? That is just not normal. You know, you're desensitizing. Our children are going to grow up and just be so insane.
And it's okay. Well, there are cases in the news every day. Some cleaning woman went to the wrong house and was knocking on the door. She happened to be black, I believe. And a guy shot through the door and killed her. All she did was knock on the door, and she was at the wrong house by mistake. And all they had to do is, where does so-and-so live? Maybe across the street or whatever.
Right.
And she's dead because of racial bias, of course. So I don't think anybody should use the N-word. It's too harsh. No. It's too negative. And other people will hear it and think it's okay to use it, but it's only little groups of people that can use it. Not good, I think.
And so on the opposite side of the spectrum, Doc, on the opposite side of the spectrum, people are terrified just to say anything at all. One wrong joke, bye-bye job, bye-bye platform. Now, here we don't worry about that. We're mainstream iHeart. But if it was going to be through YouTube or somewhere else, they would filter us out. And your reputation is destroyed. I mean, it happens. So how does the average American navigate humor in a 2025? How do they stay funny, authentic, and human without becoming reckless, knowing that there are real consequences if you're misunderstood?
That's right. Well, knowing the limits, knowing what's offensive and cruel and picking on people and laughing at the misfortune and thinking that's funny. I mean, if you think it's funny, keep it to yourself.
It makes me sad, honestly. I've always been the guy, and you probably can figure out my personality type. You know, I've been the guy to stand up on a person that's picked on. I will do it. I will run towards that for somebody else. I will speak for the one that can't speak, and I will fight for the one that can't fight. It hurts me to see somebody to happen to somebody. You know, it just really, really hurts me.
Yeah,
and it enrages me too, Doc, which is another issue. I have to be very careful.
Well,
I get really upset.
Like other strong weapons, maybe they can be used for good or bad.
And right. Humor
has many good qualities about it. And I want to encourage people to use humor, find humor, and go and enjoy humor. Build your own sense of humor. Go to there are ways to do that. There are classes, there are improv groups you can join with, and where you will learn about humor and how to use it. And don't use that weapon on people. And just don't use it at all. The negative aspects of humor, making
well
fun
here
of-
on Unplugged, I have an Unplugged, which we're trying to put solutions forward. So I'm going to ask you of a solution, I think, and you let me know if you agree, and then we're going to call on Congress because you know people are going to be listening and watching. What would you say of you, of somebody like you or yourself going in and doing a seminar to Congress, because we see the things that are said to each other in Congress. And if we can teach them how to enjoy humor, to lighten the situation, maybe that will bubble down to the people. What do you think? You think that would be something that would be useful?
Yes, if they would come to the meeting.
Oh, we're calling on them tonight. We're calling on them tonight.
That's part of it. And there are some folks in Congress that are funny and have a very well-developed sense of humor, but they often don't see what people are saying on the outside to
right.
them. I think it's a good idea. Well, organizing it and getting them to show up.
But we're calling on them tonight, Doc. We're calling on them tonight. We're going to roll into another segment, which kind of floats with this. Unless we have something to follow up with that.
I'm just going to say how to make God laugh. Tell him your plans.
Yeah, he had them long written. And, you know, I'm glad you said that, too. Thank you. You know why? Because I went to Catholic school. I'm proud of it. We say God on here. We say Jesus. It is what it is. I say Merry Christmas on here. But I will respect your whatever, but you're not canceling that. So I applaud you for that joke. I really do. That was good. We're going to talk about loneliness, fear, and the national trauma. When I say national trauma, it's not just this stuff. Think back, Doc, about post-COVID-19. Changed America. So I want you to have that, marinate that when I ask you this. We're living in a climate of isolation, hostility, and fear. Very clear that's the case. You've shown through your extensive research, and I've read some of your white papers and academic stuff. It's pretty amazing. And you've proven through your research, peer-reviewed and all, that humor and social connections are directly tied to somebody's mental health and potentially longevity. So tell the folks out there how humor can combat loneliness and national trauma. And talk directly. I want you to talk directly right now to the person that's listening or watching at home that's alone, Doc, feeling cut off and numb, the one that feels that they are not there and they're too weak to reconnect. They're just afraid. Talk to them right now.
Well, if someone is lonely, you get out in society, go to the store, go to a restaurant, and simply be friendly. Smile a lot. You can even I do it for fun and practice. I see people on the outside. I see them in the supermarket or wherever, and I start a conversation with them. Not a long one, not a lecture, but I just smile and say hello, or have you tried this product, and so on. Anything that just comes to mind, and that doesn't necessarily lead into a long relationship, but be open to that.
But it does make that situation a better situation.
Yeah. And rather than strangers passing in the aisle or on waiting in a line somewhere for whatever, that's just one of a safe topic is to pick something that you're both experiencing. Could be the weather, could be a long line, the cost of living and whatever. Things that you have in common, and make it clear you have no other agenda other than to have a friendly conversation with them. Now, maybe that can go to more. Sometimes people are looking for a mate, and romance can bloom from just a casual conversation.
Yes. You know what? That's usually how they happen, right? We try to make things so organized. You know, what did you call it, Generation Z, where people are firing their fingers, slipping on the
suicide swiping.
It's called Generation Z over here, suicide swiping, swiping person to person to person.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think that is a problem that we're facing. There's just so much distance. And I wanted to add another part to distance. Even down to the 6-foot lines during COVID, we completely shut people down. What if you were a single man, a single woman living alone? You had nobody for a year.
Well, there are people out there in the world who are in the same boat, in a sense. When you go to a restaurant, how often do we see now, you know, a family sitting together and with, say, older children, but still children? Everybody's got their phone out.
Yes.
A couple.
At dinner time, we have it at the same time, and I don't bring it to the table.
That's a rule that we're using now. Even when we have friends over, adult friends, and somebody has a question, whatever, just a factual question.
There's no dumb question, right? Tell them that as a professor and as an academic, all that, right? There's no such thing as a dumb question.
Yeah, don't bring out your phone at the table.
Right.
And so it's a simple rule. We're starting to enforce that rule now, and we got right. Thanksgiving coming up.
Oh, we'll go work on that. Are you making the turkey, Doc? Are you making the turkey?
The turkey was made by two older turkeys earlier.
you're a funny guy.
My wife will be handling that.
Nice.
And I'll be watching for phones. I think it's just so sad, though, where families are enjoying a time together, supposedly, and they're all on their phone. It just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And sometimes
you go out, and I'm guilty of it. But I got to be honest, and my engineer Rose will tell you, I get 5,000-6,000 emails a day per email account.
Wow.
So I have no choice. Like you said, your email was in for how long? I didn't even know until we interviewed you on another show, and then boom, you know what I mean? That happens, and I don't mean it. So I want to segue into another segment here because we have a 1 hour time slot. So I don't want to lose anything good with yours. I want to talk about practical framework of what's funny and what's not. In your book, you're teaching people how to determine what truly is funny and what truly is not. You're teaching them responsibility. So I'm going to ask you today, give Americans a simple framework. Look into the camera, talk into the microphone, give them a simple framework. Before they make a joke or post a comment online, what questions should they ask themselves to avoid hurting others or escalating? And I want to say one thing. I had a professor once, and it kind of fits here, and then I'm going to leave it to you. I had a professor in an ethics class when I was getting my Master of Public Administration. And he said to me, one of the class, but really we were dialoguing a lot. And he was opposite spectrum as me, so we did banter. He said, in ethics, it comes down to this, Sanati. He said, if you want to see it in the paper and your mother read that you did it, you probably shouldn't do it in government. So if it's out there, how would you feel about your mom? And that's kind of here. What do people need to run through their head? Is it, would I tell that to my mom? Is it the same thing?
Yeah, you're making an estimate of the effect on whoever it is you're talking to. And that's important it depends on the issue and the your purpose. You don't want to make fun of people in that group,
right.
and just avoiding that altogether. If you don't want it publicized, then don't say it. And as you said in your example, if you saw it in the paper, and what do your other relatives and friends think of it? The use of humor can be, and my personal view is. I'll try not to stutter.
That's all right. You sound great.
I don't like to be a joke teller. My preference is.
How did you know the next segment? We're going to get to that. That's funny.
Telling jokes, I remember a few punchlines and so on, and that's what I do. I'd rather be responsive to the situation and point out
situational awareness. I talk it all the time.
Exactly.
360 times 365, 180 forward, 180 backward. Your head's on a swivel. You should buy one of our 360 times 365 shirts or coffee mugs.
So that's what I would prefer. That is, it's sort of how I distinguish being witty, being alert to things and saying something funny. That if you notice something strange or if you notice something famous people said that were contradictory, that makes them look silly.
Put a pin in it right there. You know why? Because you're going to like what I'm going to say. Next section is, can humor be learned? So that's why I said pin it right there. A lot of people watching at home or listening are saying, I'm not just funny. I'm not funny. So is it a talent or is it a learnable skill? What say you?
Well, that's the nature nurture. And professional comedians have differed on that. Johnny Carson, for example, said that you can tell somebody to repeat things in a certain way, and so, but you can't teach them to be funny. And other comedians say, just pay attention to the world and talk about it. I would hold that you can improve somebody's use of humor and sense of humor. And first, they're going to appreciate what's funny and what's not. And not to say the non-funny things, the harmful things, the hurtful things, the damaging things. And using humor that just shows up on the...
Hold on to the humor, because you're going to hate me. I'm about to sandbag you. I created a special segment for you. We're calling it the lightning round. All right? I'm going to hit a question, and you, right off the top of your head, you give me your answer. Okay?
I'm afraid of lightning, by the way.
It's fun. It's fun. Trust me. You know I'm not going to sandbag, but it's good. It's fun. Lightning round. Ready? Number one. Quick answer right to the top of your head. Funniest thing a student ever did or said? Funniest thing a student ever did or said?
Student told me that she didn't have a sense of humor.
Okay. What city was the first city you performed any stand-up?
What city?
Yep.
I don't know.
Ooh, we got you. I know. We looked it up.
That I performed?
Yes, or you were out publicly where you were seen.
Probably San Diego.
I was going to say they're around Coronado area. Your personal favorite humor style: dry, observational, wordplay, or physical?
Observational.
Okay. One kind of humor you wish would disappear forever?
Harmful humor, debating humor, debasing, I mean, not debating, debasing humor, picking on people, the N-word for that matter.
Sure. Lightning round, no more. One daily humor habit you practice every day for resilience?
I try and think of things that are funny. And if they're funny to me, then I try them out on somebody.
That's the way to do it. Well, we have come to the hard close of our 1 hour time slot. So I want to give you 30 seconds for any final stuff you want to say or add, before we head out. And again, remember, we're going to have your wife on. I'm going to have you on again. But I want to give you 30 seconds to say whatever it is you want to say. And tell the folks how to get in touch with you, too.
Well, reading the book would be helpful, and I hope, in answering a lot of those questions, how to do it and what's funny and what's not. And how you determine that, and can you be funny? Yes, if without picking on somebody or somebody's group,
right.
Somebody's religion, somebody's race, somebody's background, picking on the police. You know about law enforcement and so on, or picking on military people. It ain't right, and they're not all the same in the first place. Yes, there may be flaws in one or another person who's a politician or a military officer or whatever. Don't pick on people. If you can say anything that they may do, pick on what they say they do that's funny and it's not harmful, that would be fine. And it's interesting, and you're sharing humor with somebody. And it's so helpful in so many dimensions. Making friends, making a lifetime friend for that matter, making romantic attachments, using humor as an introduction. All of that's good.
All right. Well, I personally, I thank you so much for being here. We enjoyed every moment. Stay in the green room. And we're going to close out, folks, because we ran it right to the end. I just want to say, truly, it was an honor to have Dr. Franzini on. Lou was wonderful. We're looking forward to him being here again, definitely. We're looking forward to his wife and that book about spirits. Very interested about that. I'd love to pull any veil back. And I'm glad that he was here to give you some tools. I want you to think back, folks, if you are listening. I hope you are listening or watching. Think back and see if you can apply any of them to your life. And after the show's aired, you can go to iHeart, Spotify, Apple, Apple Music, Alexa. We're everywhere, 300 platforms in 57 countries. You can click this episode and go through it. This was a textbook lecture from Professor Emeritus. It's not cliches. It's not empty positivity. It's truth. It's truth based by science and a lamp. And I like it. America, here's the truth. All right, here it is. We're living in a time where bullets are aimed at our leaders. Bullets are aimed at our leaders. And where violence is being normalized, where you think it's acceptable. And our children, folks, our children are watching these stupid YouTube videos. And this is just a disaster for a moving forward generation. We need more people like the good doc here. We just can't normalize this stuff. And where disagreements end in murder. Disagreements end in murder. There's no need for that. If you let this climate steal your humanity, you've already surrendered, folks. You gave up. You surrendered it. You gave up your vote. And people died for that right to vote. You gave it up. Do not surrender. People cannot laugh hard enough. They have to survive. Humor is not going to change your reality. It's not. I got to be honest. Great jokes. He can tell a diarrhea joke or a fart joke. But tomorrow or whatever it is, 10 minutes later, you're still going to have that inner pain or whatever is going to still be there. But for that one brief moment, you smile. You let a little bit of endorphins go off in your brain. You got a little neurotransmitter firing there. And for a moment, you felt better. You're not erasing it. It's not a drug where you're trying to mask it like alcohol or something. But it is a temporary fix with clinically based and academically studied and peer-reviewed results showing that there is a long-term benefit. We have to keep that in your mind. We need to stay strong. We have to stay strong. We have to use humor to enjoy our opponents. Like the good doc and I had a little debate on immigration. We didn't beat each other up. We respected each other's opinion. And I welcome that opportunity again. He's a person, human being. He's a well-educated individual. And, you know, he deserved me to hear him just like he deserved to hear my response. So I say, folks, laugh with intention. Laugh with respect. Always laugh together. Right, Rose? We laugh together. Because as long as we are Americans, we can laugh together. And you know what? I'm going to say it. We can pray together. Because we can fight together as a nation. As a nation, we can fight together. And yes, we can laugh during that fight together as a team. Because then we are a nation of one. And that is the Democratic Republic of the United States. I'm Eric A. Sinati, and this is Eric A. Sinati Unplugged. No handlers, no filters, just the truth with sheer courage. Keep that fight up, America. God bless you out there watching, listening, and God bless the United States of America. We'll see you next time.